that's perfect lies a perfect little town where one team stands alone. But now, something stirring that will change this place forever.
Perfectville. Welcome to Perfectville, your first place podcast for your Miami Dolphins, now part of the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. I am Sam Marcoux, and he is the two-time, yes, two-time Hall of Famer, Mr. Christopher Cullen. Chris, how are you, my friend?
Oh, the regular season is upon us. We are a day away, 24 hours from watching a real regular season football game. Sam, I'm hype.
Yep, Philadelphia Eagles versus the Atlanta Falcons, bird versus bird. As a Dolphins fan, we are all Eagles fans, at least until kickoff tomorrow. But you're right, the regular season is here. We've gotten through all the painful process of training camp, mini camp, OTAs, preseason, draft. All those things are fun. Nothing is as exciting as the actual NFL season here upon us, and the Miami Dolphins are playing the Tennessee Titans at home week one. We will definitely be talking about that. In fact, that's going to be one of our topics here on the coin toss, I would imagine here, Chris. But before we get to the coin toss, we do need to talk about the citizens of Perfectville. We do this every single episode, but we will continue to do it because you guys continue to do it. And that is to talk about some of the reviews that we got about the lovely town that is Perfectville, Chris. Here on Apple Podcasts, we got three new reviews, three new citizens chimed in this week at the town hall meeting. And here you go. The first one comes from Second Grade Teach 84. Five stars, says, I love your show. Hi, this is that really cool guy on Twitter with the Dolphins Classroom. Sam and Chris, you guys are the shit. I just found your podcast at episode 98, and I immediately said, these guys are cool, and I will be on their show next summer. Keep that in mind. At first, old episodes and Travis Wingfield could get me by until a new one was posted. Now I sit in a dark room waiting for the next episode. I don't eat or speak, but when you drop the newest podcast, I explode with energy, yelling, eating, flooding rooms with light. We'll talk more later. My address is, well, I'm not going to give his address, but he gave his entire address right here on the actual review.
Oh, no.
Now, again, I know exactly who this is.
Let me guess, he doesn't teach common sense.
No, this is a second grade teacher who clearly is lacking education when it comes to street smarts, because he gave his entire address on a public forum. Not only are you going to get yourself an Aronde Bagston, but you're probably going to get like a bag full of shit, because people are just going to send this to you. I'm going to edit this for him so he doesn't get himself in any sort of issue from the no good nicks that live in Citizen or in Perfectville, not Citizenville, Perfectville. But thank you very much, Second Grade Teach 84. I know exactly who this is, Chris. This guy reached out to us on Twitter, and yeah. I believe his handle's at Dan Marino, although it's not actually Dan Marino, but he's got an awesome classroom for any student. I would actually trust my kid to go to this classroom, because clearly there's wise decisions being made inside that classroom.
Has Dan Marino come out and explicitly said that he is not a second grade teacher?
No, I believe he's had a bunch of second graders, some by his wife and some not, but I don't believe he has said he is not a second grade teacher.
I've never seen him in Second Grade Teach 84 in the same room together. That might actually be Dan Marino.
It might be Dan Marino.
Maybe that's Dan Marino's address. We should Google it.
Look, I know that I will do that later. And I know that there are some former quarterbacks that listen to Perfectville. So maybe Dan Marino is one of them now. Who knows? But thank you very much. You have qualified yourself for an Aronde Bagston.
And his classroom is amazing. If you haven't seen that, oh my God, that thing, it's decked out. I mean, in the way he incorporates dolphins too in learning, like second grade learning, they have like a dolphin pod area where they sit and read and stuff. Like, it's the greatest classroom I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, like if my kid acted up at all in that classroom, like, but Dad, teacher said it is, like, you shut your mouth and just do whatever the nice man Dan Marino says to do. Do whatever teacher Dan says. Speaking of amazing, we actually have a couple of other amazing reviews here. This one comes from TP Rizzle, which I wish my name was TP Rizzle. And this says, five stars, truth. I love that these guys are true Dolphins fans. They love to hate everything this franchise has encompassed over the past 10 years. Keep this fan base in check. Well, there you are. We are the moral police of the Dolphins, Chris, according to TP Rizzle, which kind of coincides with what we were talking about last week when we had Citizen's Choice and people were asking us to be negative. I kind of feel like this show sometimes is that. It's kind of the devil on your shoulder for everyone who's very optimistic about the team. We kind of go, oh, not so fast. Don't forget that they fumbled that one time and they threw that interception that other time and they let that touchdown happen with 30 seconds left. We are the moral conscience of the Dolph fandom.
Yeah, we try to be. It's just There's a lot of shows out there. There's 100% positivity. There's some out there that are just satire and shit all over the team. Like we've said since, I think, the very first episode, we are two guys at a bar having a beer, talking about the team. Yeah, we get optimistic. Yeah, we get pessimistic, but it's normally just shooting the shit how we feel deep down. We don't plan the show at all.
clearly.
And we just get on the mic and just talk about how we feel. It's completely straight from the hip. So it's going to be as real as it gets, because there is just no cookie cutter. There's no pre-planning. There's no scripting. We just talk from the heart, and it's from a very dark black heart of being a fan of this team for a very long time.
Yeah, and just to prove that we don't really plan this show, right before we started this episode, I actually screwed up the intro that we've been doing for 111 episodes, and I was like, I don't even know what we say anymore, and Chris kind of had to remind me what I say on every single episode, but that's because I don't write anything down, and my brain sucks. But somebody's brain that does not suck is AP Steel 55. He gave us 5 stars, Chris, and said, Dan Campbell equals Kool-Aid Man. And he says, after well, this is because of you, so pay attention, as the school teacher would say. After listening and hearing the announcement of the partnership with Dolphins Talk, I figured I'd add another Miami Dolphins podcast to the playlist. After hearing the Dan Campbell story, basically comparing him to the Kool-Aid Man, kicking doors down, punching linemen in the face, I immediately knew this would be my number one podcast. Subscribed. Yes. In love. These guys truly know the Finns and the deep history. Keep up the good work and can't wait for more. So the Kool-Aid Man, Kool-Aid Dan, if we want to call him that, that's a story that Chris threw out last time about Dan Campbell when he was the coach for about a minute for the Miami Dolphins, running into the offensive line coaching room and just punching the shit out of Dallas Thomas and whoever else, and then walking out and people being inspired by his player coach mentality. So this is your doing, sir.
I mean, just still the image of like the other players getting like just pumped up and walking over Dallas Thomas's body to get out in the practice field and just go do some Oklahomas and beat the shit out of each other because Dan Campbell started basically a fight club. I'm so glad that was his first AP Steele's first inkling into our show. So don't worry, downhill from here. But yeah, that was a lot of fun. That story was great.
Yeah, I really hope somebody out there in the Photoshop universe can go ahead and put Dan Campbell's face on the Kool-Aid Man busting through some sort of wall. That would be a fantastic t-shirt. Yeah. Can you imagine the t-shirt if it was just the Kool-Aid Man, but instead of the Kool-Aid Man's face, it was Dan Campbell's face superimposed on top of it, and it just
giant and red.
Yeah, and it just said Kool-Aid Dan, and then he was punching a dreaded Dallas Thomas. I mean, that would just be I would make that shirt and then buy it from myself. That's how fantastic that would be.
Yeah, the best part is like the Kool-Aid Man's normally holding other like smaller pitchers of Kool-Aid. Like it's almost like an inception of Kool-Aid, but instead the Kool-Aid Dan could be holding like two helmets, and one of them's got like dreads coming out of them, so you know it's Billy Turner, and then the other one is Dallas Thomas, and he's just punching holes through walls with their heads, because that's what I imagine.
I love it. Well, thank you very much, citizens of Perfectville. You guys have all qualified for a SipSec koozie, so much so that I even have one of your addresses already.
So but, there's a lot of people.
Yeah. But with that and Kool-Aid Dan, why don't we get to the coin toss here, Chris? And why don't you go ahead and tell me what your topic is? First, I will tell you what my topic is. Second, we will flip this coin and we will move on to the heart of the show of Perfectville.
I'm going to go with the easy one, and that's prepping for week one.
Week one against the Tennessee Titans at home. No, very, very good choice here, sir. And I'm going to go with something that's very similar to that, that ties into that. I want to talk about the Miami Dolphins depth chart, or more specifically, the 53-man roster as it is constructed today. We have some very strange, shall we say, constructs here. Some things that are not being replicated by anybody else in the league, which either is going to make Adam Gase and company a genius or the butt of many, many jokes. But we will get to that here. But first, we do have to flip this coin. And this coin, Chris, is a 2016 coin. This is quarter here. It's from 2016. Do you remember what happened in 2016?
How could I forget? Ryan Tannehill led us pretty much to the playoffs with a really great middle pack of the season. Jay Ajayi went crazy with a couple of 200-yard games. But, of course, in perfect Dolphins fashion, we couldn't just end on a high note. Tannehill tore his knee. Matt Moore took over, went to the playoffs, lost to Pittsburgh, and the rest is history. But it gave us a lot to build on, hopefully. The rest is history. 2016 was very much a bittersweet year.
It was very bittersweet for many reasons, but something that's going to ultimately end up being, in my opinion, a very pivotal, Wow, pivotal year for the Miami Dolphins for many reasons. Number one, Adam Gase, first year as a rookie head coach for the Miami Dolphins, gets us to 10-6 and into the playoffs for the first time, and who can remember? Second of all, Ryan Tannehill having his best season as a professional, ends up tearing his knee and losing him not only for the rest of that season, but essentially the rest of next season as well, as we all know. We were never able to recover, went 6-10 in 2017, and here we are in 2018. Still not necessarily understanding exactly what we have in Ryan Tannehill. All those questions should have been answered, I should say, if his knee had not been, you know, folded backwards by Calais Campbell and the Arizona Cardinals. So, very pivotal year. This quarter is actually from West Virginia, which is the home state of Satan himself, Mr. Nick Saban. So, a lot of Miami Dolphins historical significance in this 2016 quarter, Chris. As always, call it in the air. I will flip it right now.
Tails.
Why is it always tails? This makes no... You know what? I have a theory here. My theory is that quarters are not weighted equally, and that the head of the quarter weighs more, therefore it falls down more often than the tails. That's my working theory right now, but you do win again. I think that makes you at 75% so far since we've introduced the coin toss to Perfectville.
Yeah, I can. I was going to say tails never fails, but then you threw out the 75%. So tails almost never fails. You go ahead and go first. Let's start with a 53-man roster. I think that builds nicely into what we expect from that roster for week one.
Well, there you go. So you are deferring to the second half. So the first half is talking about the 53-man roster and the depth chart in general. As you guys all know, we had cut down day last week, but that is never the final story. We always see a lot of changes that happen after the initial 53-man roster. At some point during this entire shakeup of the roster, Chris, John Denny, yes, Mr. Legend himself, was cut for about 3 minutes before being re-signed by the Miami Dolphins. So technically, John Denny's reign of terror was interrupted slightly, although I'm going to go ahead and let him bridge his time for the 5 minutes that he was not officially a Miami Dolphin. But I do want to take a look at this here, Chris, because there's a couple of things. Number one, the starting running back for the Miami Dolphins is who?
Frank Drake.
It might be Frank Drake, because we have listed on our official roster's depth chart both Kenyon Drake and Frank Gore as the starting running backs, which puts Sonoris Perry as the second string running back and Kalen Ballage as the fourth string running back or third string running back. But point being, we have four running backs on the roster. A little bit weird into and of itself, but that's not the weirdest thing about this roster. Who is our starting quarterback, Chris?
Ryan Tannehill.
Yep, absolutely. Who is our backup quarterback?
Brock Fales,
absolutely right, because we have both David Fales and Brock Osweiler both listed as the backup quarterback for Ryan Tannehill. And then who would be our third string quarterback, Chris?
Sage Rosenfels? I have no idea.
It might very well. Sage Rosenfels might get an actual tryout for the Miami Dolphins, the way we are hoarding quarterbacks like they are going out of style. If your fantasy football team had four quarterbacks, you would look at that owner and go, what the hell are you doing? We have Luke Falk that we picked up off of waivers from Tennessee. He is now our third string quarterback, but fourth on the depth chart. The only team to carry four quarterbacks going into the regular season, of course, naturally, the Miami Dolphins, when the trend has been to go with only two quarterbacks. Some are still going with three with an emergency, you know, non-dressing quarterback, but we have four, Chris. So if nothing else, neener, neener, we have more quarterbacks than you.
Yeah, I'm kind of spinning on this one because I don't know really. I get bringing in Falk because he's been on Tennessee's roster and in that team facility and in the locker room and listening to the coaches and the audibles and the playbook. It's very Bill Belichick-esque to bring in a guy just cut from a team that you play that week. So I get that. However, very surprised with keeping Fales in Osweiler. It's just, I don't know, man. There, it feel like, especially with Parker being injured, that there's a maybe possibility to have Isaiah Ford on the roster. I know he's on our practice squad, but just be available in the game. But to have four quarterbacks, four running backs, and the way Gase is splitting who's starting and double backups, he honestly said he was fucking with the media. I think he's just trolling the media.
Sure.
And things are coming earlier or soon before the game Sunday. I don't know, but it's very odd how they're doing this.
Now, I think it makes sense, like you said, to bring Luke Falk in to have a little bit of a maybe a leg up against the Tennessee Titans since he was in Titans camp as a rookie. However, he actually is citing, he being Adam Gase, that Ron Wolf was with the Miami Dolphins over the summer and mentioned to him that he always drafted a quarterback. He always had somebody in the pipeline. And if you look at the ages and the progression of our quarterbacks in front of Luke Falk, Ryan Tannehill's 30 years old. He is the unquestioned starter and the most talented quarterback we have on the roster, bar none. But David Fales and Brock Osweiler are both 27, 28 years old. They're pretty much at the height of where they're going to be. And I think we can both agree here that they're not long-term solutions to be a starter. They might be able to get you through a game or two, but anything after that, and it really is, you know, nervous time for the Miami Dolphins. Luke Falk is a rookie at 21, 22 years old. He's somebody that you can put on this roster, not have any expectation to be a player necessarily, you know, next year or this year, of course, but try to develop him and see what happens. So I get it from that standpoint. It's just weird to me that you would keep both David Fales and Brock Osweiler and Luke Falk behind Ryan Tannehill. I mean, four quarterbacks, that is, again, you keep four quarterbacks, that means you're taking away from someone else. And it's not going to be the running backs because we have four running backs. And on top of that, we have four tight ends in Marquise Gray, A.J. Derby, Mike Gesicki, who's now the third string tight end, although he will be starting, and Durham Smythe, also another rookie, as the fourth string. It just doesn't make much sense to me. It's very bizarre the way this is set up. And if you look at the wide receivers, you've got Kenny Stills, Albert Wilson, Tanner McAvoy, or however you say his last name, that who we also picked up from waivers as the third string behind Kenny Stills and Albert Wilson. You also have Danny Amendola as your, you know, number four. And then you have Devontae Parker, five, and Jakeem Grant, six. So we have six wide receivers. We have four quarterbacks, four running backs, and four tight ends. I don't even know if we have an offensive line at this point. I mean, it's crazy to me how this is constructed. I have never seen anything like this. I'm being 100% honest. I have not seen that many skill positions kept on offense ever in the history of being a fan of the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, I feel like Adam Gase is like completely torn, doesn't want to get rid of a guy or two because they all worked hard and they're all kind of even. And there's not one person. I guess the only thing I can point at, and it could be completely wrong. I could be very wrong here, but I just feel like not enough guys stepped up and just like completely solidified theirself to be somebody that we can count on. It sounds like Gase is nervous that, you know, we've seen some stuff in camp, but all of a sudden, you know, Osweiler's going to go out and suck. So he's going to need Fales. And if he cuts him, somebody's going to pick him up. And then we're stuck up Schitt's Creek without a paddle. So honestly, I look at Falk, like you said, yeah, we're bringing him in because he's acknowledged the Tennessee Titans. But to me, honestly, he's Brandon Doughty's replacement, right? He's like a guy that we can keep on the practice squad, maybe develop. If not, let him go and get the next guy in. But keeping both Fales and Osweiler, if we lose Ryan Tannehill, knock on wood, for any length of time, the season's over regardless of either one of those guys are playing. Like, the season's over, maybe four wins, maybe three. I don't know if they even have that up their sleeve. But why keep both? Like, I just don't understand why we're keeping both and then bringing in another guy, loading the tight end box, loading the wide receivers. It screams to me that Adam Gase can't trust the guys at the top at some of these positions.
Yeah, and you know, you look at the offensive line, and right now we're only focusing on offense. We will switch to defense here in just a minute, but you look at the offensive line, Juwan James, Jesse Davis, Daniel Kilgore, Josh Sitton, Laremy Tunsil. That is your starting offensive line, right tackle to left tackle. Behind them, Zach Stirrup, who that's a great last name if you're a baseball player. Ted Larson, who, you know, is who he is, and Sam Young, who was cut and brought back. We only have eight offensive linemen right now. We don't really have a backup center. We don't really have a backup right guard necessarily, although some of those guys are somewhat swings. But we only have eight offensive linemen right now, which tells me that Adam Gase has a lot of faith in this starting lineup. But it also tells me that I think you're going to see a lot of double tight end sets and big jumbo type packages where you're going to see somebody like a Durham Smythe in there as an extra lineman, so to speak. It also tells me when you have six wide receivers that the exact opposite could also be true, that we're going to line up and have five, you know, four and five wide receiver sets all the time. And sometimes the wide receiver is going to be a Kenyon Drake or maybe a Sonoris Perry or somebody like that. So maybe he's looking at it from that standpoint and saying, you know what, I want to have options for my entire playbook and not just run the same style, you know, 12, 13, 21 personnel. And this gives me flexibility. Or maybe it's something where he knows that the people that are on the practice squad, like an Isaac Asiata, like an Isaiah Ford, like a Leonte Carew. Maybe there's a people almost like how they do it with the 10-day DL in baseball, where you can stash a guy away for 10 days, give him a little break, bring somebody else up, give them a quick crack at it, and then switch it back. I don't know. It's very bizarre how he's constructed this offense, in my opinion.
Yeah, he did that a few times last year with Rashawn Scott and Leonte Carew, where one would be inactive and the other guy would be on the starting for Sunday on the main roster, and then not inactive, and then he would flip-flop on the next week. So maybe that is what he's doing. You're right. Maybe he's just comfortable with the depth we have even all the way to the practice squad. That's a good point. It reminds me of the scene in Old School where Will Ferrell is talking to the marriage therapist with his wife, and he's talking about the waitress at Olive Garden, and he's like, I'm looking at her wondering what kind of panties, her underwear that she's wearing. Maybe they're green. Maybe they're a thong. Maybe it's something we don't know about. And that's what I feel like the way Adam Gase constructs this roster. I'm just like, maybe he's just trying something we've never seen before. Like, I hope this is going to work out.
Do you think Adam Gase looks at the actual players in the Miami Dolphins and then, like, in his mind's eye, it actually shows different types of panties, like in the scene you just described? Like, he sees Isaiah Ford running down and it's like frilly lace panties. That would be interesting if that's how that we thought. Be. So,
yeah, like Zach Stirrup, he's just wearing stirrups, yeah, and like assless chaps. That'd be great.
Well, that I don't know if it'd be great, but it would be a thing.
That's very true.
Yeah, speaking of flip-flop, because I think you said that somewhere in there before we went off on that weird tangent, let's flip-flop over to the defense. So there are some standards, if you will. Cameron Wake, he is obviously the starting defensive end. Robert Quinn, also starting defensive end, which puts William Hayes and Charles Harris as the primary backups. And then Andre Branch. We kept five defensive ends, Chris. Once again, have two people listed for one position, both Jordan Phillips and Devon Godchow listed as the starting defensive tackle, along with Akeem Spence, Vincent Taylor being the primary backup. I'm starting to believe here, Chris, that maybe Adam Gase thinks if he lists two people for one position, maybe we get an extra person that we can put on both offense or defense. Maybe we can get 12 instead of 11. Maybe that's his 12 personnel if he puts two running backs in one slot. Like, hey, look, I listed them both in the same slot. They both get to go out there. They just share the ball, running together, holding hands and the ball at the same time.
It's like when the Power Rangers were all in there. They're all individual, right, like animals, and then they come together to make the Megazord or whatever. It just counts as one. So maybe Godchow will like carry Phillips on his back, and that counts as one player, and we can have 12 guys on the field technically.
Even better, maybe Jordan Phillips gets on Devon Godchow's shoulders, especially on special teams, and then he can just count as one player, like one nacho, right? And then he just is able to swat it because they're 18 feet tall in that
formation.
Wait,
was that a Saving Silverman reference?
That was one nacho,
man.
There you go.
It's all put together. It counts as one nacho.
That's right. That's a Jack Black in Saving Silverman. You're not the only person that knows movies,
great
although
movie.
That's I didn't even know what movie it was from. I forgot. So thank you for saving me there, saving Sammerman. Also, Kiko Alonso, Raekwon McMillan, and Jerome Baker officially starting now. So we essentially have two rookies, although Raekwon McMillan is not technically a rookie. Following them, Chase Allen and Stepphone Anthony, as you like to call him. No big surprises there. Cornerback, Xavien Howard and Bobby McCain listed as the starters. Torrey McTyre and Cordrea Tankersley as the primary backups. And then this one shocked me because I didn't think he was going to make the team coming off the draft, but Cornell Armstrong beats out Tony Lippett and all other contenders to be the fifth cornerback on this team. And of course, safeties Rashad Jones, TJ McDonald, Walt Akins, and Minkah Fitzpatrick. No shock there. But Cornell Armstrong, Chris, talk to me about him and Torrey McTyre beating out Tony Lippett, who I thought was nothing but a lock for this team.
Yeah, very surprised with Lippett. Sadly, it sounds like he had that Achilles injury and he just hasn't come back to full form. I mean, he was really looking good before his injury. That's just one of those. It's so tough, man, where it's just nothing beyond his control that really stopped some progress. I was working here with the coaching staff and some other guys stepped up and took advantage. I really do like, though, that these guys that are getting drafted even late in the rounds are making headway and giving opportunities to earn opportunities, giving opportunities to earn starting jobs or just a roster spot, because it's one of those things where in my mind, sometimes you think like after the fourth round, fifth round, you're lucky to get a guy that makes your team. They're almost like shoo away, throw in draft picks. So to see Cornell make the team like that, he had some really good talent. I think he was at Memphis. He just really did well where he was, or maybe Southern Miss. Yeah, he's one of those Missouri, Southern Missouri, something like that. But he did well in college, and he obviously earned his spot. Surprising to me, I was on Dolphins Talk podcast a couple of weeks back, and he had mentioned that it's a possibility that McCain might start on the boundary and let Minka play in the slot like he did in college to keep Rashad Jones, McDonald, and Minka all on the field. Why not play your best guys out there, put them on the field, Sandlot style, and just let them go play football? These guys know how to do it. Minka played 60-70% of the snaps at Alabama in the slot anyway. I'm totally all for that. Just anything to keep the best guys, best 11 on the field, I'm all for. So I actually kind of really do like what they're doing there, because McCain has just been balling out.
Yeah, I'm okay with that too. And it actually reminds me of something that Dave Wannstedt once said, which I am not a Dave Wannstedt fan by any means, but he said this one time about the offensive line when he took some guards and made them tackles and made a center a guard, and he started mixing and matching. And what he'd said was, I need my five best offensive linemen, regardless of position, to be on the field. And that year, actually, it worked out really well. I believe that was the Jamie Nails year from 2001 or 2002 or four, whatever that was. But he was right. And now he tried to do that again and he was wrong. But I feel like that's what's happening here. To your point, I think getting Minka Fitzpatrick on the field in any position is a good one. And it's not just us being homers. PFF actually had Minka Fitzpatrick ranked as the number one rookie in terms of defense this year, Chris, going through preseason. So he's ranked high. He passes the eyeball test. He passes the stats test. You need to get that guy on the field any and all times, early and often. So I agree with you. I think putting him in the slot and letting him be the slot cornerback, and then if you need to drop him back into safety, you let him drop back into safety from time to time. Just keep him on the field as often as you can.
Yeah, well, and it's not even close to the same situation where I know you remember we drafted Jason Allen from Tennessee, and I think he was like a really good safety or something, and we tried to change him and move him to corner, and then by the time he finally was like starting to pick it up, we moved him back to safety again, and just completely turned around what he had learned and really confused him, and it just really set him back completely for his career. Minka has done this before. He played in the slot with Nick Saban in an NFL-style defense, so this isn't like we're drafting a free safety at Alabama in the first round and saying, well, go do something weird and play in a slot. He knows what he's doing. He's been there. He can handle it. He can do it. And if the preseason is any indicator of what he's going to be this regular season, he's going to be in the discussion for Defensive Rookie of the Year all year.
I think so. And for all those fantasy football players out there looking for a clever name for your last minute fantasy football teams, might I suggest two in the Pinka, one in the Minka. Ooh. That's just one that I would like there, because he is going to shock everyone this year. He is the shocker.
I mean, I've got an easy Drake oven in one of my leagues.
I like that one, too. I like that. Speaking of things, speaking of this team, we can't discount special teams, Chris, because the battle of preseason for me, kind of half joking, but also very serious, was the kicker position when kicker number one beat out kicker number two in an epic battle. So he gets to maintain and actually get the name on the jersey. And that is, of course, Mr. Jason Sanders. He is our kicker, at least to start this season. Greg Joseph was told to go elsewhere. I think they did it from a distance, because if they were within punching distance, they probably wouldn't have a jaw anymore, because that dude is jacked. Matt Hawk, or Matt Hack, depending on how he kicks the ball that day, is your punter for the second year in a row. And then John Denny, as we alluded to, was cut for about 2 seconds, but only to make room for somebody else before bringing him back, is your long snapper. And then, of course, your kick and punt return specialist is Mr. Jakeem Grant. So, Chris, what do you think? What are your thoughts on our punter, who we had last year? And, of course, like I said, the epic battle between kicker one and kicker two, won by Jason Sanders, who I believe was kicker one. What are your thoughts on Jason Sanders being the rookie kicker for the Miami Dolphins here in 2018?
I'm going to make a bold prediction that he is going to have a extra crispy type of season, and that's only because very recently George Costanza himself, actor Jason Alexander, keep that in mind, Jason Alexander, is the new Colonel Sanders for commercials, and our kicker, Jason Sanders, just made his first NFL roster. This guy is going to be multiple herbs and spices worth of great kicking, extra crispy again on his kickoffs, and he had a good leg to boot, dark meat legs. So he's going to be, I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. I just thought about that. But yeah, Jason Sanders, he did good in the Jesus Christ, that was fucking horrible.
Are you hungry?
No, I literally just had tacos. So Jason Alexander, geez, fucking Christ. Don't even cut it. Whatever.
No, yeah, I went Jason Alexander as our kick. Can you imagine George Costanza as the kicker for the Miami Dolphins?
Jerry! Jason Sanders is our kicker. That's all I can say about him. He had a good preseason, so yay. I want, though, somebody to Photoshop, after you said kicker one and kicker two, Jason Sanders and, FIU kid in the Dr. Seuss thing one and thing two, but just change it to kicker one and kicker two. I think that'd be hilarious.
I think you're right. I think we want a Kool-Aid Dan t-shirt, and we want kicker one, kicker two, Dr. Seuss style for Jason Sanders and Greg Joseph. I agree with you. I think the way they chose the kicker for the Miami Dolphins was probably how we start the show, which is they put Jason Sanders as tails and Greg Joseph as heads and flipped a coin, and it landed on tails and said, well, Jason Sanders is our kicker now. I'm not sure. I don't know if you really trust a rookie kicker, especially a seventh rounder. It wasn't like he was considered a stud, quote unquote. But Greg Joseph didn't do anything to differentiate himself from Jason Sanders, although Darren Rizzi did say he thought both kickers were NFL caliber kickers. So goodbye from Perfectville to Mr. Greg Joseph. But I guess we ride with Jason Sanders, Chris.
That's what we do. And of course, I'm happy with Grant kick return. Hawk or Hack is going to be just okay, I guess, at punter. I'm not really too excited about our kickers. I am upset about losing Cody Parkey, but that one stings. So, but Jason Sanders, good luck to you, bud. Knowing our team, a lot of games are going to come down to him. So it's going to be an interesting season to watch. Get the beers ready.
Imagine Cody Parkey's homecoming on this episode, week six. I will be in attendance. That's the main reason I'm going to that Bears game, is so that I could see Cody Parkey in person once again. And hopefully this time he doesn't kick a game winner, unless he's been traded back to the Miami Dolphins for some reason or another. But you're right. It is going to come down a lot to the kicking game. I think Jason Sanders is going to be responsible for a lot of wins or losses, which takes us to the second half of Perfectville right after this commercial break, where we will break down and analyze and predict what the Miami Dolphins will do against the Tennessee Titans week one, coming up on Sunday. What's up, citizens of Perfectville? Sam Marcoux here to talk about my bookie. And ever since Chris and I started the town of Perfectville, everyone has been coming to us going, hey guys, you know your stuff about football. Can you give us some advice about gambling? Who should we bet on? Who should we bet against? Should we take the over? Should we take the under? Well, the truth is, I have no clue. I don't know who's going to win. I don't know who's going to lose. I don't know who's going to cover. I don't know who is a mush and who is not. But if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. And here's why. Who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I tell everyone, bet with MyBookie. Trust me, this is your best bet this season. They've been in business for years. They have tremendous reviews online. And their mobile site, easiest to use, bar none. Who doesn't like that? Longevity, high reviews, easy to use. Perfect. Lay down some cash and win big today. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, yeah, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score in each game. That's like a double fantasy bet right there. You're playing fantasy football, and then you're gambling on the fantasy player. Join now, and MyBookie will match the citizens of Perfectville's first deposit 100% up to $1,000. Do you know what that means? You guys realize? That means if you put $1,000 into your account, MyBookie is going to match that. So you can turn $1,000 into $2,000 just like that in the blink of an eye. Use promo code PERFECTVILLE to activate this offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code PERFECTVILLE when creating your account to claim this bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. Check out MyBookie today. All right, Chris, it is time for the second half of Perfectville. All the citizens are ready. You're ready. I'm ready. All of them. Everyone is ready. Hopefully the Miami Dolphins are ready, because it is that time. Yes, on Sunday, the Miami Dolphins face the Tennessee Titans. Game number one, week number one in Miami. It's the real deal, man. No more preseason. No more training camp. No more mini camp. It is go time here for 2018. What are your thoughts initially here for the Miami Dolphins against the Tennessee Titans?
I'm going to go out on a limb and really risk being overacting right now, but I think this is one of the biggest first weeks in a long time for this team. I think there's so many different variables that break down this game when it comes to an AFC team that we're playing that's coming into the house, 1 o'clock, September. It's going to be hot. We're going to be in our white uniforms. They got a young Marcus Mariota, who is almost a couple steps behind Ryan Tannehill in the same type of path. You know, when is he going to pick it up? When is he going to step up and be that starter? When's he going to stop being injured? There's so many questions with this, and we can really start off hot. The season, the schedule really lends in favorable to the Miami Dolphins if we just stay focused, keep our heads on straight, and play really good football. If Adam Gase is legitimately right when he comes out and says to the public and to the press that he's excited about this team, he doesn't know what anybody else is talking about, we can't wait to prove people wrong. This is their time. We've been saying this before, Sam, about Ryan Tannehill personally, himself, and then the rest of the roster too. Anybody, Bleacher Report came out. The fucking Bleacher Report made us, 32 in the recent rankings, right? Dead last in the league. Meanwhile, the Bills named Nathan Peterman their fucking starting quarterback. Yet we are dead last in the rankings. So enough talking, enough press. This is the game right now where you come out week one on a 1 o'clock game where no one nationally gives a shit. And you prove your worth. Not a close game, not a bitter back and forth game. We played the Tennessee Titans last year as a fucking shit show because we played against, I think, Matt Schaub, their backup. And then I think, of course, Cutler, or our backup, was playing. It was just horrible, horrible game. We won like 3-2 or some bullshit like that. But recently we've had their ass. We've had their number. Our pass rush has gotten to Mariota. We've hit them and hit them often. So it's time for these young guys to step up, these veterans to wipe off that stink of being a Miami Dolphin player for the last year and really get this ball rolling and the momentum going from the get-go.
Yeah, I'm excited to see them start the season at home. It's been a while since we've done that. But, man, they got a lot of weapons on offense in particular. They have Delanie Walker, who's a top five tight end in this league. You've got Derrick Henry, who is a big, big, beastly back. We've had trouble stopping the run for a very long time. We have undersized linebackers. So handing the ball off to Derrick Henry and letting him turn around and just run over everyone could be a problem. You've got Corey Davis as a wide receiver. You have Rishard Matthews, who you know is going to want to look good against the Miami Dolphins. They have a lot of weapons on offense. How do you go about stopping this this team offensively with our defense?
We've got to keep Mariota in check. When he rolls out of the pocket and breaks away from the initial pass rush, that's when things go wary. That's where he can really hurt you. He can either take off and run. We haven't had success against quarterbacks that are even remotely athletic. Tyrod Taylor owns us, like completely, absolutely owns us. He is part ownership of the Miami Dolphins because Tyrod Taylor as a watcher of Hard Knocks, has owned the Miami Dolphins because he just breaks the initial pass rush and it gives his receivers time to get open and improvise, and he has just killed us and picked us apart. And if we don't just stick to our guys, get the pass rush and really wrap him up, he could hurt us big time. And you're right, they have a good running game with Derrick Henry. It starts there. We have to stop the run, force Mariota to throw the ball where we can go nickel package and get our playmakers on the field on the defense, force him into some bad throws, get a strong pass rush with only rushing four. That's where Robert Quinn and Wake come into play, and utilizing some coverage disguises and using our speed at linebacker and blitzing Baker and blitzing McMillan. This is where Burke really needs to step up and show his worth as defensive coordinator. He's had now a whole another year to look at this in an offseason with these healthy guys. Knock on wood, we've came out pretty damn healthy from the offseason and training camp and preseason like we asked for. We wanted that. That was our biggest takeaway going into preseason, is to come out, start the regular season healthy. Well, you know what? We did. So now it's time for our players to step up. We have no excuses, and the coaches have no excuses. It's do or die time, and it starts with stopping the run, Derrick Henry. We need Godchow and Phillips and them to get on his shoulders and really step up here and tackle Derrick Henry. He's a beast. If we can stop the run, force Mariota to throw 30-40 times, that's a recipe for a victory for the Miami Dolphins.
Defensively, if you can shut down Delanie Walker which, you know what, you might be able to just pat him on the back and he might sprain an ankle. He is very much an injury prone tight end, but when he's healthy and he's right, he is a beast. And if you can shut down Derrick Henry and you can mitigate Delanie Walker, all of a sudden Marcus Mariota has to force it to the wide receivers. Now, I like Corey Davis and I like Rishard Matthews, but they're not world beaters. They're not going to physically impose their will on somebody like a Rashad Jones, Minkah Fitzpatrick, Xavier Howard, and so on and so forth. So I think if you can get him to force him to throw the ball to his wide receivers, that's going to work in our favor for the Miami Dolphins. If they're going to sit on Derrick Henry and he's going to get 5, 6, 7, 8 yards a carry, we're not going to win this game. You know, that's going to allow them to control the pace, control the field position, control the clock, and all of a sudden we're not going to have the time to basically score. So to me, on the defensive side of the ball, we really need to get after covering Derrick Henry, both in the run game as well as, you know, any passing that he might get to Delanie Walker. Those are the two. If we can shut down or mitigate those two, I think we'll be in good shape. Now, flipping the other side of the ball, Chris, what do we have to do on offense to win this game?
Well, we got to pound the rock. We have to, if we're going to use a two tight end set, that really causes confusion for their defensive coordinator and their players, because if you have just Smythe out there, you pretty much know he's an extension of the offensive line. He's like another tackle. That's how Notre Dame used him. Yes, he can catch a couple balls here or there and help you with a first down as a third option, a check down type guy, no problem. But normally, if he's out there, you're not worried that he's going to take the top off of you. You're expecting a run or a short pass. So if we can work in both him and Gesicki, or both him and Gray, and get Tannehill options to do the RPO and hand off or keep and throw or keep and run himself, we really need to work the short intermediate passes with Amendola, yep, with Stills, with Wilson. Get them the ball in space, let them run, because we are without our tall, lengthy field-stretching receiver again. Devontae Parker, Armando Salguero said he will not be playing Sunday. So here's the options now to get the ball to Grant, get the ball to Stills, and of course, like you said, any young quarterback or any good quarterback's outlet, it being a tight end where you can put the ball anywhere in a catch radius, that's Gesicki. This is his time to shine. It seemed like all preseason, Gase has been just keeping him under cloak, the cloak of invisibility. He did not want anybody to see him. They wanted the entire NFL to forget we had him on this team. So this is time to break that kid out, break the glass in case of emergency, let Tannehill just go crazy. But it's going to be the run. If we set up the run, Tannehill is really good on play action. He can roll the pocket some. That just opens up our offense big time. And the biggest thing we can have on offense is a good defense that you know, keeps stops, holds them to field goals or punts, and gets the ball back in our offense's hands.
Yeah, you know, I think when it comes to the run game on offense, we need to have an effective run game. And what I mean by that is not anything where it's a 200-yard outburst by Kenyon Drake or Frank Gore or anybody else. But far too often, this team, I think, has gotten itself in 2nd-and-3, 3rd-and-1, and been unable to convert. And that's where I think we really need our running game to step up, is to make those conversions, because this team, the way it's constructed with a Danny Amendola, who I think is going to have a big game, especially early this season, I think he's going to be that guy that Ryan Tannehill looks for and says, I need 7 yards, I'm going to go throw it to this guy. Danny Amendola, Albert Wilson, Kenny Stills has shown this preseason that he can run the actual route tree versus just the 9 route, in my opinion. I do think we're going to move the ball incrementally through the air, you know, 8, 9, 10, 12 yards at a time. But we're going to need the running game to pound it in from 5 yards out, or get us 3, 4 tough yards here, there, and everywhere. I don't expect Kenyon Drake to get 100 yards in this game. I don't expect us to maybe even have a team rush of 100 yards unless Ryan Tannehill or somebody scrambles for some. But I do expect them to be effective. And if they can be effective, if they can grit out those 1, 2, 3 yard gains when we need it, you know, 3rd-and-3 and being able to turn around and hand the ball off to Frank Gore and let him get 4 yards, that's an effective run game as far as I'm concerned. I think Mike Gesicki, especially down in the red zone where we've struggled in preseason and just in the past few years, that's where he's going to shine. Eventually, he will be that Jimmy Graham style seam ripper that I think we'll unveil on the league. But I think early, it would be great to see him get a red zone target, if not a catch. But that's what I'd like to see out of this offense. I'd like to see us have a ball control through through passing, quite frankly, and then kind of put the exclamation point with the run game, almost backwards.
Well, and I'm going to make a bold prediction here and say I think Gase actually goes very heavy pass to start the game, almost like a up-tempo, no huddle, possibly four receiver, three receiver tight end, and have Tannehill in the shotgun and just short intermediate routes to get his rhythm going, to get his confidence going, to get a hot hand, and really just get the crowd going to. We have to remember this is a home game. The crowd will be anxious. It seems to be split down the middle. We can really gain a good home field advantage early if we come out and just really chomp down the field. Don't settle for a field goal. Get in the end zone. If we'd have something like a 6 to 8 play, 60-yard drive, churn up maybe 8 minutes of the clock and that was 7-0, I think that would just be huge because it'd be momentum. The crowd's into it. The defense comes out. We can pin our ears back with Quinn and Wake. I think, honestly, keeping our offense from being predictable is where Gase is strongest, where you're expecting run and he comes out and pass. I think one thing we talked about a lot before Tannehill got hurt, I remember in the 2016 season, I fell in love with the way Gase would go deep on 3rd and 1. And he would just stretch the field and go for the long ball when the defense is stacking the box, expecting a QB sneak or a quick handoff up the gut with the fullback and letting Tannehill rip it to Stills or rip it to somebody else down the sideline. That's where Gase is the best, and that's where Tannehill was striving when he was really hitting his stride in 2016, and that's what I'm most excited to see.
Yeah, something to keep in mind for Sunday as well is the weather. As you talked about, we are going to be playing in Miami. We'll be in our all whites. We are putting the other team in their dark colors here, and the Tennessee Titans are actually in much darker uniforms this year than they have been in years past. However, it does look like it's going to be about 90 degrees, and it's going to be humid as hell, but we're going to have some cloud cover because it looks like we are going to have some thunderstorms on Sunday, which wouldn't that be a kick in the balls if the game was postponed or delayed once again due to weather for a second game, second season in a row. I'm not hoping that happens. In fact, I hope the opposite happens, but more evidence that I think we'll have more of a ball control offense with short passes, intermediate passes, as opposed to having a slippery, sloppy field for Ryan Tannehill on that reconstructed knee to be standing in the pocket for a long time with a suspect offensive line, if you will, against a pretty stout defensive front from the Tennessee Titans. So I would expect a lot of slants, a lot of 5-yard ins and outs, some rubs, some screen plays to Albert Wilson and things of that nature. Just a very, very short ball control offense, at least early. And if the sky does not open up, if it does dry out, then maybe you'll see some adjustments in the second half where they try to go deep. What's your gut tell you, Chris? Is this a win? Is this a loss? And if so, by how much?
Well, they have a very good opportunity to let me down, so I'll wait until that happens. Meanwhile, we're 0-0, Sam. The regular season's here. You know me from the 110 episodes we've done together and from your time knowing me personally. I try to be an optimist. Recently, it's been more along the lines of keeping it realistic for the show's sake and just for my sanity. But I'm going to go ahead and call it. I'm going to call it a victory. I think it's going to be lower scoring than we think. I think it might start off a little hot and busy, but then it's going to slow down into a grind. I think the heat, the humidity is going to be a big deal. Robert Quinn at practice today jokingly took off his t-shirt and threw it on the scale, and it weighed 3.5 pounds. no joke. Honestly, I saw that tweet this morning or earlier today. 3.5 pounds from the sweat that's loaded into a shirt. I think we brought in a lot of young guys, a lot of guys from other teams where this heat will actually be a factor for us as well. Luckily, we've been practicing in it, but it will be a grind, I believe, and it will be a nail biter because that's what we do. I will call it Miami Dolphins 20, Tennessee 14.
So I agree with you that I think it'll be somewhat of a low-scoring game. Do you remember the last time the Miami Dolphins actually scored more than 19 points week one?
I know it wasn't last year.
It was not last year. We scored 19 last year. We scored 10 the year before against the Seattle Seahawks. We scored 17 against the Redskins in 2015. It was actually 2014 where we beat the crap out of the New England Patriots, and I believe we scored 33 points opening week. But that was the last time the Miami Dolphins have actually gotten over the 20-point mark week one. We traditionally, at least recently, have started relatively slow. Now, with that in mind, we have won 3 of those last 4 openers. But the little bit of the 2 years that we've had Adam Gase here, we start off slow week one, and I think that's because he takes that approach of what do we have, what are we working with, let's get into the second half and make some adjustments. So I think your thought process of it being a low-scoring game is correct. I think you're right on the money there. I don't see why the trend would change this year unless we were just sitting on gold that we have not revealed to anybody yet. I'm more of the pessimist of the two. As you said, I think, what did you have at 20 to 10?
2014.
Okay, so you got it a one-score game. I'm going to go with a one-score game, too. And I'm actually going to go with 23 to 20 Miami Dolphins. Even though I'm a pessimist, I can't bet against them when we're 0-0. That would be...
Yeah, not week one. Come on.
Not week one. Week two, absolutely. Week one, yeah. No. But I say we get over the 20-point mark. I think we probably do the vast majority of our scoring in the third and fourth quarter, which could lead to an exciting game. But with the field conditions being what they might be, and with recent trends showing us that we don't score a lot in the first half, especially in an Adam Gase based offense, I do think we'll see the scoring happen in the second half of the game. Your prediction for the first score, who will be the first person to score for the Miami Dolphins in 2018?
I think it'd be pretty exciting. It'd be maybe a 12-yard pass will be in the red zone. I'm going to say Jakeem Grant on a slant.
Okay, I'm going to go with a pretty exciting 37-yard field goal from Jason Sanders, a.k.a. Kicker 1. That's going to be the first person to score for the Miami Dolphins in 2018.
Of course. Setting our season up for the most exciting yet.
Wouldn't that be great if we won 24-21 and it was nothing but field goals from both teams the entire time?
Absolutely not. That would not be great.
The New York Giants actually beat the, I believe it was the San Francisco 49ers back in the early 90s, like 15-12, and they got all their points off of field goals.
I was at live at a game that we beat the Ravens 9-6, all field goals.
Yeah.
No one scored.
Yeah, but at least, yeah, I mean, good, that one's even worse because there's only like three or four, five field goals, I guess, in that one. At least the Giants were kicking, you know, getting down there all the time. All right, so you've got, would you say Albert Wilson scoring the first touchdown?
Jakeem Grant.
Jakeem Grant. Wow. You're high or something. It's not going to be Jakeem Grant.
I hope it is. Goddamn.
What do you? Who has more sacks at the end of this game? Cameron Wake or Robert Quinn?
Robert Quinn. He's hot, man. I think he had three or four in the preseason. He's coming in hot. I think Tennessee's going to have to really concentrate on blocking Cam Wake because they've got the right tackle and they're going to have the running back probably lean that side. I would go heavy on Robert Quinn. His motor looked really hot.
Who's going to be the most influential rookie for the Miami Dolphins week one?
Minka Fitzpatrick. I think he's going to have a couple pass breakups, possibly a sack, or I can see him making a big stop on Mariota when he rolls out on a play on like a 3rd and 5 or something. So I can see Minka having a really great game.
I'm going with Jason Sanders. I'm all in on Jason Sanders
right
now. Yeah, I just realized his name. So I'm going with Jason Sanders. I got Jason Sanders. I got the Colonel on the brain. No, I'm going to go with
Jerome
Bettis.
That's the most we've said his name since we signed him, by the way.
Yeah, well, his agent called me. He's like, dude, he's on the team. Can you at least just say his name a couple
give
of times?
Him that?
Yeah, I was like, all right. Fine, whatever, Colonel.
Voldemort of our offseason. Yeah. He who shall not be named.
Yeah, well, that's okay. So you've got it 20-14. I've got it 23-20. We got it in a close, somewhat of a low scoring, medium scoring game. We both have the Miami Dolphins winning. So we will see after week one how well we did with our predictions here, Chris. Maybe we're homers, or maybe we are just future seekers or future seers or whatever those are, whatever those people are called. Gypsies? Is that what they're called? Gypsies? I don't know.
Something like that. Hey, Sam, well, let me just throw this out there to you and to the citizens of Perfectville. It's a rhetorical question, basically. I know what your answer would be, but could you imagine, just sit here and imagine it's 4:45 Sunday afternoon, the game just ended, and we're victorious with a win of 45-10. What was your thought process for the season going forward if that were the case?
I am researching hotel rooms for the Super Bowl
in
the
Atlanta.
First week of February.
It's only a few hours from my house. That'd be great.
No, I'm if we win 45-10, I'm walking around making dolphin sounds with my hand on top of my head like it's a fin, with my fin being all the way up for the rest of the day. I should mention I am actually going to be at the NorCal Dolphins tailgate party here. We actually have a Dolphins bar here in Northern California that I am going to be going to. So shout out to Mark Angelo for setting that up. So I will be there with the fellow Fin fans. Perfectville will be having its banner flying. We'll take some photos. It should be a good time, assuming we win. But now I want to win. If we don't win 45-10, this is going to be your fault.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah. So
that's on me.
Yeah, that will be a failure, but it won't be one of the greatest doll fails in history. But it is time, Chris, for the greatest doll fails in history. And this one goes back to that 2016 season that we threw the coin at earlier this year. And, of course, it's going to go to a guy who's still on this team since it was only 2 years ago, but one of the greatest doll fails in recent history, which actually created a meme out of it, has to go with Kenny Stills dropping what would have been the game winner against the very tough Seattle Seahawks, wide open down the middle of the field. Ryan Tannehill spots him. I was there in attendance and I was like, this is it. I could see the whole play develop. He throws the ball It drops perfectly into Kenny Stills' hands. He bobbles it like it's a hot potato. It hits the ground, and then, of course, it turns to Mr. McCain himself, who's got just the biggest grimace you would ever see, and it's been used as a meme ever since. Take a listen to just a heartbreaker of a pass gone wrong.
Tannehill, plenty of time. Tiles up the long ball. Tannehill, separation. Kenny Stills.
So as I said, Chris, I was actually in attendance, and when Ryan Tannehill threw that ball, you can actually go back and check our archives on WelcomeToPerfectville.com. I was turning around, and I was like motherfucking everybody in there because we were playing in Seattle, and I was like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. And then Seattle Seahawks fans everywhere went crazy, and I turned around and realized that Kenny Stills had dropped what would have been the game-winning touchdown. We lost that game 12-10. Just a nut kick and a half. Travis Wingfield was also in attendance for that game, and both of us drank heavily the rest of that day because of that. We still love Kenny Stills, but fuck you, Kenny Stills, for that.
Yeah, love the guy, love his activism, love his community support down in South Florida, but God, that was a nut kick, like you said. I remember he was so wide open, and Tannehill put so much air under it that the camera had plenty of time to zoom out to where you could see there was no one within 30 yards. And all you can do is just go, because that never happens. That never happens in the NFL. That is super rare that a busted play happens that big at that moment in the game. And we just were flipping out, and I think I still – to this day, I can point it out. I might take a picture and post it on Twitter. The scuff mark from my half-filled Yingling can that I threw Randy Johnson 99 miles per hour at my fucking garage door when he dropped that football. And the sick feeling in my stomach of course he drops that. I could have caught that. It just was mesmerized. And who knows what that does to the season. Like, I mean, really, we could have started our run then because it took a couple hits on the chin, and then we kind of really ran away after the Steelers game. But that could have been the momentum swing to beat Seattle on the road. They still had their full legion of boom out there on defense to get that win on the road on opening day. I mean, that would have been really historically monumental for this generation of Dolphins teams. So it would have been huge, and that drop was just never forget. Never forget.
No, never will. And we'll never forget the meme that came from Bobby McCain and his grimace, which is still, again, shown to this day on the sidelines. He that video of him grimacing was how every single Dolphin fan has felt time and time again. So we never want to feel that way again. So next time, Kenny Stills, just catch the damn ball, and we can call you Kenny Skills, as the great Kabir Singh calls you, instead of Kenny Stills. You ready for a three and out here, Chris?
Yes, sir.
All right. First down is yours. Go.
First down, Khalil Mack, 2 second-round picks traded to the Chicago Bears. Hey, he's out of the AFC. We don't have to play him on the Raiders this year, but of course, you mentioned that you're going to the game against Chicago. We are playing him on the Bears. However, that would not sting as much if we lost to an NFC North team. Sam, 2 first-round picks for a defensive end. What are your thoughts?
You know, it's one of those things where I'm glad Chicago did it and not us, because I don't know if anybody, the way draft picks are in this league, they're worth more than gold. They're worth more than players, quite frankly. Getting Khalil Mack, I mean, could you imagine if Khalil Mack was an outside rushing linebacker for the Miami Dolphins? What does that look like? Is him being on this team, would it constitute 2 first-round picks on top of some other things, or would it be waste? You know, would he not fit in with this scheme? I'm not sure. He is somewhat of a, you know, generational talent. So you probably make sure he fits in kind of like an Ndamukong Suh, but man, 2 first-round picks. I think he fits better with Chicago than he does here, but here's hoping he, you know, sprains a knee or something week 5.
Well, Sam, let me ask you this. Adam Gase comes in 2016, trades Cam Wake. What is the fan base's reaction? Because right now, John Gruden has got a 10-year, $100 million deal, came in and said, fuck you, Khalil Mack. I don't care if you're a fan favorite. If you're one of the best players in the goddamn league, I am sending you out of here. Publicly, players on the team are tweeting, what? Are you serious? Like, I mean, completely blown away. He was a favorite of the fans and of his teammates in the locker room. John Gruden walks in and just trades him away. What's the reaction like if Adam Gase were to walk in here in 2016, new coach, brand new, and trade Cam Wake?
Well, that's the difference, is he would have been a new coach. I think people would have lost their shit, and rightfully so. John Gruden has a track record not only in the NFL as a Super Bowl champion, but he's got a track record with the Oakland Raiders. So it would be almost the equivalent of like a Don Shula coming in and trading Cam Wake, and you go, you know what? We're going to have to roll with this because he's Don freaking Shula. Well, he's John freaking Gruden when it comes to the Oakland Raiders. I can tell you, living out here, Raider fans are face-palming everywhere. They don't agree with this, but it isn't their money. And John Gruden is kind of a master when it comes to getting draft picks. He did this in the past as well. So it would not surprise me if this long-term helps the Raiders out, but by the time it helps them, they'll be in Las Vegas, and all the Oakland fans aren't going to even, you know, enjoy that either. So
use that for your next skit. And we lived through that in 2008. Bill Parcells came in and traded Jason Taylor and cut Zach Thomas.
Oh, so there you go. I mean, so we do have some history there, and you know, Jason Taylor eventually came back. Zach Thomas did not. Bill Parcells, but again, he wasn't a Miami Dolphin prior to that. So, you know, I think John Gruden having that history with the Oakland Raiders helps soften that blow a little bit. But it's going to be tough for sure. Absolutely.
All right, second down, Sam, you're up.
Second down, we're going to stick with the Raiders, and I'm going to go with the other side of the ball. Mr. Amari Cooper came out and said that the Raiders might have to score every single time they have the ball in order to beat the Los Angeles Rams. Not exactly a ringing endorsement of that defense that now does not have Khalil Mack. What are your thoughts on Amari Cooper? Is this damning of his defense, or is he just trying to pump up his offense? What do you make of him coming out and basically criticizing his defense by trying to pump up his offense, kind of a backhanded compliment?
Yeah, that's just something you don't do publicly. If I'm in the locker room and I'm a defensive captain, I'm asking him what the fuck his problem is to do that. But I think that's just proof in the pudding right there that John Gruden possibly has already lost his locker room, or he's just not meeting the standards of the millennials and how they react this day and age in the locker room. This isn't Derek Brooks and Warren Sapp anymore. These guys are publicly saying a lot of things that most teams keep in house.
Yeah, I mean, Khalil Mack was a total disruption on there. I mean, not only just sacking, but stopping the run and everything else. And quite frankly, I agree with him. I think the only way the Raiders win this game is if they score on every single possession, and maybe on a couple of Los Angeles's possessions, meaning a pick six, fumble recovery for a touchdown, you know, blocking kicks, something along those lines. I mean, this Rams team, you know, they really are one of my favorites to win the Super Bowl, not just the NFC, but the Super Bowl. Going in to this, you know, Oakland team that does not have a very good defense, even with Khalil Mack, but then you take the best player off that team. Amari Cooper might be right. You might have to score on every single possession in order to beat the Rams in week one.
He might be right, but I just don't agree with saying it publicly, especially before you've even played a game.
No, that's true. What is it about wide receivers this year just popping off at the mouth? Jarvis Landry, Amari Cooper, all these guys. Anyway, third down there, Chris.
Third down, Le'Veon Bell did not show up to work today, Sam, and his offensive linemen are pissed. We've got a couple of linemen that said that he makes four times more than I do, two times more than Villanueva, and we're the ones making it happen for him. Marquise Pouncey came out and said a new running back is born in the NFL every single season. Who would have thought Kareem Hunt would be a starter? If John Connor didn't have cancer, he would have been a first-round pick, and he is our running back, and he's ready to go. We can move on without him. Sam, holy shit. What do you think about this situation?
You know what I think about the situation? Good. I'm glad. I don't like the Steelers. I don't like Ben Roethlisberger. I don't like the fact that they're there, you know, year in and year out as a good quality team. Le'Veon Bell, as talented as he is, we've talked about him in the past. I'm glad that somebody else other than the Miami Dolphins are having these locker room issues, whether it be Amari Cooper and the Oakland Raiders or whether it be Le'Veon Bell and the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm just happy that there's nothing that's going on in Miami, as far as I know, that's causing any sort of issue. That's why I'm happy about this. If I'm a Steelers fan, I'm not happy about this for obvious reasons. Le'Veon Bell is more than just another running back. He's very, very talented. But when you got your offensive line turning on you, that doesn't bode well for long-term success, in my opinion. I think they're going to have to figure out a different solution other than just getting Le'Veon Bell back into camp, because at this point, it seems like he's lost the confidence of his teammates and the ones that matter.
Yeah, I mean, that's like pissing off your school bus driver and hoping they drive you cross country and keep you safe. I mean, these guys are the ones that are keeping him standing still, keeping him earning his money, buying them a couple Rolexes or something for getting him 2,000-yard seasons just really isn't enough when they're still showing up and grinding and you're not coming to play. Yeah, I get it. You want to get your contract. You want to get paid. He said, other than Todd Gurley, you just signed a monster deal. If you take Todd Gurley out of the equation, if he gets this franchise tag and plays on it, Le'Veon Bell would be making $7 million more than any other running back in the league. That's ridiculous money, insane money, and they're not wrong. The offensive line is what helps him do that. Without an offensive line, he's not running shit. So when you've already pissed them off now, I can honestly see the Steelers being such a hardworking Steel City, things like that, and the Rooneys still owning the team. I can see him looking to trade this guy out of there just to keep the sanity and keep the guys happy that are on the payroll.
Hey, man, he's only one man, and maybe right. That's why Adam Gase has two starting running backs in that slot, because if one goes haywire, he's got another starter. It's good strategy by Adam Gase, in my opinion.
The rest of the NFL is playing checkers, and Gase is playing 3D chess.
That's right, but that is this episode of Perfectville. Everyone, enjoy your very first game of the season that matters. Chris, we're going to be watching this one.
Man cave. Whole family's coming over. We're making some grub. I will shoot some shots of whiskey, but I'll also take some pictures of the koozie going around, the Rondi Bagston with the fam. We'll be dressed up, going crazy, and hopefully celebrating a win, man.
Well, there you go. You'll be celebrating, hopefully, in the man cave. I'll be celebrating at the Miami Dolphins, NorCal Dolphins watch party at La Cabana in Northern California. We'll be sending out a Rondi Bagstons to everyone so we can have a group photo with our koozie in all of them. Everyone enjoy a very, very good, hopefully, Dolphins win here week one. Chris, anything else you want to say before we get out of here?
That's it, my man. Enjoy the game.
Well, goodbye from Perfectville.
Later.
For the most in-depth and up-to-date coverage of the Miami Dolphins, check out DolphinsTalk.com. You can even find this podcast, Welcome to Perfectville, on that site. Once again, DolphinsTalk.com.